Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
From the shores of Malibu, where the waves are pumping, to the Great Wall of China, and back to the streets of Las Vegas, where the UFC is happening. We are live. This is It's Time Radio, the show where we talk about what you think about, but may be afraid to voice. Do not worry. We will voice it for you. We talk about everything. UFC, film, politics, President Trump, President Biden, you name it, we talk about it. It's sex, drugs, rock and roll, no holds barred radio, folks. And we got stuff to talk about today, coming off a big show on Saturday for the UFC. I'm here with my partner and co-host, TJ DeSantis. TJ, I am still amped.
Yeah, it feels like you're still riding the thunder a little bit. You got some extra pep in your step. Normally we record on Wednesdays, but we're doing it on a Monday. Yeah. And honestly, Bruce, like, you've got more energy, I think, right now than my brain can normally handle on a Monday.
I feel it. I feel the reverberations in my body. My adrenaline's still pumping. I got to tell you, I was so amped. Thank you, TJ. I was so amped before the show, knowing what the show was going to entail. Of course, missing the Ortega fight, you know, with Alex and all. I was really, really looking forward to that fight. But the 10 fights we had on Saturday night, from beginning to end, from prelim to end, were just rock and roll city.
Yeah, no, 100%. It was an amazing night. And I don't know if it was maybe the added fans, and not really fans, but like, there were more people in that room than normal. They were actually talking about it on the broadcast. And and maybe it's because that energy was there, but I felt like you had a little extra something in the octagon on Saturday. Am I off base on that, Bruce?
No, you're not off base, because, you know, I'm always up for every show. And as I always say, that I go out to prove myself every night, that it's my first night when I walk out. But there are some shows that you just subliminally, what goes through, speaking personally, what goes through my body is just even more of an amp.
Right.
And
yeah.
And sometimes it'll happen, like, you know, John Anik and I will spend time together before and after the show. And, you know, we could actually tell on each other the amount of work we have, him especially, with all his pre-prep and everything else. We go over the fights and we amp each other up. And also, too, when I walked in and I saw that there was, like, you know, 20, 30 or more seats added.
Right.
So now we got people in there, and then people started coming in, and Paul Anka, the great Paul Anka,
legendary Paul Anka.
He comes up to me and, you know, Bruce, nice to see you again. And I remember I met him years ago, and it was just, what a gentleman, right? And he's like, I want you to please say hi to my sons. They would like to meet you. And he introduced me to his girlfriend. And
wow,
it just started feeling like a little normality was coming back. And then I walk over, and, you know, Kourtney Kardashian is there with Travis Barker. And Travis, I've met him, you know, numerous times over the years, a huge UFC fan. And they were all, you know, cuddled up and enjoying the show like couples do. And next to them is Machine Gun Kelly and Megan Fox. And
it looked like a fun time, Bruce. It just looked like a fun time.
The Fertitta brothers were there.
Really?
Lorenzo and Frank were there. It was great to see them. I haven't seen them in so long. And, you know, there were other people that came in. And then afterwards, in the back, there was a room where, now let me preface this. Everybody, we are in COVID-19 pandemic issue times. Okay.
Right. Sure.
So I know you saw the show, and, you know, you all know, if you watch the show, my show here, how COVID safe I am. Okay. I've been vaccinated. I follow all the COVID protocol. We all know about that. So there was a room in the back, like a green room, food, bar, people were mingling a little bit, right? You still, you know, wearing masks and, you know, all that. But here's the thing. Everybody had to be tested coming in.
Right. Right.
You could not enter that arena unless you were tested. And so, celebrity or not, had to be tested. I'm still a little nervous about shaking hands and talking to people personally, but, you know, got a little more comfortable, but I still kept up my COVID guardian barrier. Right.
Yeah,
but
as you do.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, taking off the mask, could take a picture, you know, real quick, holding my breath or something like that. I had no problem doing that. But aside from all that, it was just, yeah, it added a sense of normalcy, shall we say, to the show, maybe a pre-prep of the fact that like Dana told me Saturday night when I saw Dana for the first time. Dana, how you doing? You know, we always exchange our words before or during the show, whatever, whenever we see each other. And he said, Buff, you better get ready and train for the 24th. I go, Dana, I train for this shit every week. He goes, I know you do, but you know, we're 24th. It's crowded. I said, right. Dana, I only got two words. We're back. Right. And Dana started laughing his buns off. And we, you know, we shared a moment together. It was,
that's
it was,
awesome.
It was, hey, really cool.
Rumor on the street is I might be there.
Really?
Yeah.
And why is not why? I think it's great, but I mean, how did this? What's going on?
I mean, I can't really talk about that, but I mean,
it's got to be Fight Pass.
You can put two and two together, so we'll see what's up.
Yeah, it's called Fight and Pass.
Right. True. True. It might be my pass. It might be my pass to the fights. You know.
Yeah. So there we go.
We'll see. We'll see. I'm excited about it. Just simply, you know, obviously, I'd be lying if I didn't say I'm still nervous. You know what I mean? Because we're so close to this thing being over. You know, we're at least the idea of it being contained to the point where we're not going to be shut down anymore. You know what I mean? And I like you said, Bruce, my whole entire being craves a sense of just normality, just normal, what Fight Night has always been and what I hope Fight Night will be once again, and we're close. So hopefully it is exactly what we want it to be coming up on April 24th.
Well, I hope so. But now that you brought that up, and we do have UFC talk to continue, but let's just go with this little COVID segue you just brought up. I want to go into a couple of things. I know we talk about COVID all the time, but I'm going to get an update on COVID. I love the fact that you said that because I would love for that to happen. I'm worried it's not. And I'll tell you why.
Mm.
Texas has been open. Florida's been open. We are going to Florida, even though I've been vaccinated, even though I'm very careful protocol. As I said, maybe on the show last week, but I'll say it again right now, and I want the fans to understand this. 15,000 fans in the audience. I will not be taking pictures. I will not be shaking hands. I will not be getting close, and I want you all to understand that, okay? I'm vaccinated. I don't know who is and who isn't in the field of dreams of 15,000 wonderful UFC fans being in attendance.
Yeah.
But we're back in a state that has just gone through or is going through a spring break. They're having issues in Florida. They're having issues in Miami.
Right. Curfews even in that part of the country.
Curfews, crowd gatherings. I saw one thing, 5,000 people sardined in a concert, which I think is beautiful. But at the same time, I think we're losing track of the reality where we're at. And it's going to take time, 2 or 3 weeks, for these spikes. And now what's happening is that the CDC, right, they're claiming, the CDC director, she's given an emotional warning. And you know what she gave an emotional warning of?
What's that?
Impending doom. Impending doom.
That's not a warning. That's like a threat.
She says right now she's scared. Okay. People are getting a little soft because, like what you said, and I'm with you, TJ. I do see light at the end of the tunnel.
Right.
But now look outside. Okay. Good news. London records zero COVID-19 daily deaths for the first time in 6 months.
Yeah,
but the cases are soaring everywhere else in Europe.
Right.
Italy's about to go on lockdown again.
Yeah.
Right. The Philippines now has ordered more than 25 million people into lockdown over Easter as COVID-19 cases soar.
That's my
biggest fear. But these are areas that have been locked down like we've locked down.
Oh, I know. That's my biggest fear, Bruce, is we're
my biggest fear.
We're almost there. Let's not fumble at the 1 yard line.
That's a horrific and great way of putting it because you're describing it perfectly.
Yeah.
You know, and now there's been about 143 million doses of COVID-19 vaccine that have been administered in the United States. Thank God I was lucky enough to be one of them. I got the Johnson & Johnson, by the way.
Shot and done, right?
That's the one shot and done. Now, I will tell you, the people that got it with me, and I got it the day before the show last week in Vegas, not this weekend, but the weekend previous.
Right.
I almost questioned, should I have gotten it the day before the show? Because I didn't know what the after effects would be. Single dose.
How'd you feel?
Well, people that got it with me went into fever. I mean, I talked to, they went into fever. They were horrible. I felt what we call, you ever wake up and you feel off?
Yeah, like, yeah. Just like you're a step behind, you're sluggish. Yeah.
Can't quite pinpoint what it was.
Mm-hmm.
But not UFC 260, but the fight night the previous week.
Yep.
When I get in that octagon, I equate it to having one knee, having a blown out back, having, you know, the flu as I've had doing it, coming off laryngitis. It's the old story. The show must go on. I can muscle through.
Right.
So I did. I don't tell anybody my issues.
Right.
But I was definitely off.
And you know, the thing is, Bruce, that that may or may not have had anything to do with the shot itself. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes we're just off, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
what bothered me, though, it continued for about 3 days. So right, the only common denominator I could give it was the vaccine. But
you know, the problem is, though, too, Bruce, we're in flu season. Like, we are. We're at the tail end of flu season. Yeah. So who knows? And this is my thing, and you said this, you know, going back to the arena and not taking photos with fans and things like that. We've been talking about how the world is going to change forever for a year. And now that you're going to be back in that environment, like, let's not escape the realities that we've been talking about for a long time. It's, you're not going to be able, at least responsibly, going to be able to mingle and give fans the normal pre-COVID experience that you have in the past, because things are different.
Yes. And I catch myself because I want to, right?
Well, it's just in your nature.
Yeah, it's my nature. So again, not to bully this point across, but I have to just, I love you, UFC fans. Just know that. I love you. I'm sorry.
You're not trying to be a dick.
No, I'm not. I'm so far from that. It's ridiculous. But you know, at the same time, wondering what safety and protocol is going to be put in effect in the stadium. Now, if the state of Florida is wide open, then obviously there's no restrictions or issues for the arena to put plexiglass up like hockey.
That's
to separate us from the fans. I don't think it's going to be there. I wish it would. I just a little 6-footer right there, that first row, you know, just give us a separation. Fighters are going to be walking out and people are going to try to grab them. And they're going to, you know, touch the hands, touch this, touch that, touch that.
I never thought about that.
That's what I'm thinking about. You know,
yeah. I know that this stadium is a hockey arena. So, I mean,
yeah, but that's a different arena.
No, I understand that.
What you mean is they got the plexiglass in the back.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Like, if they wanted to do that, it would definitely play with the sound of the room. Because if that first entire row is going to be plexiglass, that the sound of the crowd has to go up before it can kind of come down and be heard. That would be interesting, but I don't know.
We live not just in our own personal lives, but as a society, we live in an everyday, ever learning, changing world. So now that
that's always been the case, by the way.
It's always been the case, but in this COVID-19 issue or pandemic, the world in which we live, the UFC was the first one to bring sports back.
Right.
Right. Now we're one of the first ones going back where we have a crowd in sports.
Right.
So
the crowd that you're going to have is much more traditional than, say, like the NFL has run games with limited capacity.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what the protocol is going to be in Florida. Like you said, they're wide open, so really none has to be in place. But I assume that, you know, you guys are going to be doing whatever it is that you need to do to make sure that people like yourself and the athletes are separated to some point.
Listen, until further notice, it's the same way for me. It's wear the mask sitting down, wear the mask walking around, wear the mask into the octagon.
Right.
I usually don't take it off until the first fighter enters if I happen to be in the octagon. I be careful with the referees. I don't want to mention any names, but one person I work with, and I'm not saying what capacity they are, was at us with a trip in Abu Dhabi where they were totally healthy and they came back and they got COVID 2 days later. Where did they get the COVID? Did they get it on the plane? Did they get it at the event? Did they get it? Whatever. The fighters come in, they test negative on a Monday and positive on a Thursday. This is the world in which we live.
Sure.
When you fight, what do? What's the first rule of fighting?
Protect yourself at all times.
Protect yourself at all times. Well, we're fighting in life right now, and I'm going to protect myself at all times. I'm going to go. I want to go out to dinner in Florida. I want to go see friends. I'm not.
Are you likely to continue wearing a mask when this is all over?
Yes. And given
in general?
Yeah, I think in general, especially in airports.
Yeah. I mean, because that's the thing, too, like that's been something that is pretty traditional in a lot of cultures around the world.
Right.
And, you know, Americans just that wasn't part of our culture. And now looking back on it, I don't know why it would ever go away. You know what I mean? Like, it's something that if that's something that you want to do, I don't think there's the taboo. I think, Bruce, is gone. Or at least I hope it is, because it is sort of the responsible thing to do. If you're not feeling well or you have a cold, the most responsible thing to do is, if you have to go out in public, is to wear a mask. So you don't.
The taboo is gone.
Yeah.
But due to our previous administration, division in the world, in the United States, the opinions of people to wear or not
sure,
to,
I
to
get
be
it.
Here, let me finish. To be or not to be, to wear or not to wear.
Yeah.
This will continue. And it'll continue on an individual basis, depending on what the law states. You have to, you have not, have to not.
Right. I'm just saying people aren't going to look at you funny anymore.
They're not going to look at you funny like we used to look at, you know, Asian populace walking through airports and maybe giggle 10 years ago. Why are they wearing a mask? You know what? They were smart. Okay, let's face it.
Yeah, I mean, it's the polite thing to do, honestly.
The polite thing to do. So now, to answer your question without my long-winded answer as usual. Yeah, I will continue to where I deem it needed.
Uh-huh.
Until we're living in a perfect environment where we're just facing person that has a cold at the next table or maybe the flu down the street. The bottom line is we're always coming up against these things, but we've come up against something recently that kills us more than mm-hmm. anything else kills us.
Sure.
So yes, I given the situation, I'll always have masks in the car. I'll always have gloves in the car. And I think if anything, this has just caused me to become more of a germaphobe versus the minor level of germaphobe I was before the pandemic ever hit. So my life has changed forever. I will continue to do certain things.
It's not a bad thing either.
It's not a bad thing. It's staying healthy.
Right.
And in terms of environment and work environment, these are the things, and I've touched on this before in business, but there's things that have happened in this pandemic that I have excelled at in business and increased my business 300-400% in certain areas, which is called the virtual world. Okay, of the Zoom meetings and the virtual appearances at events and the videos to be there when I can't be there and all that. This is going to continue in business because businesses like myself in my varied areas of business,
yep.
I have found the value of this virtual world because A, it saves me time and travel.
Right.
B, it saves my clients money to pay me to travel and mm-hmm. other people to travel. C, it creates a very simple environment to get the same punch that they would fly me out and spend tons of money on me for,
yep.
which they'll still have to do for me to be part of their event, whatever money they care to offer
sure.
me. But they're going to save a lot of money. And
it's
I'm going to save a lot of time. It's more efficient. I can be in 5 places in 1 week where I could only be in 2 previously.
Right.
I'm going to continue to do this type of work unless I have to be there. Okay. Like Poker After Dark wants me to go play poker, right, on TV.
Uh-huh.
Damn it, I'm going to be there.
Right. Yeah.
But if they wanted me just to announce it, well, here's your video, baby. Go
sure.
play it on the air. Okay.
Yep. Yep.
You know, that's just, I'm serious. It's proven to be very successful, and companies are realizing their bottom lines are loving it and their mm-hmm. profit margins
well,
are loving it.
Think about it. Think about all the buildings that have had, you know, people in the office working that they found through COVID they don't need to have in house anymore. And if you don't need those people in house, you can reduce your square footage immensely. My wife works for a pretty big company here in Southern California, and they've talked about going back to work, and they keep pushing the date back. Now I think the earliest they'll consider coming back is September of this year. Uh-huh. And I personally don't know if she'll ever go back to work because she does a job, Bruce, where she doesn't have to be on hand. And, you know, even if they were back in the office, the meetings are so efficient through Zoom that I don't know if they'll get away from that because they can just plug in and do things that way. And I think we're going to find out that a lot of people that used to have to go to work every day are no longer going to have to do that. And their lives, for the most part, are more fulfilling because they're not sitting in traffic. They're not doing
right.
things that sort of destroy a good portion of their day in transportation. And it's a step in evolution in a lot of ways, I think.
Well, you're strengthening my point in various ways. And again, we get back to another situation. It's like the business that I run here, that Kristen and I run. If I was 20 years ago, pre-internet or 25 years ago, I would do what I always did. You know, 10, 20,000, 30,000 square feet of offices,
right.
you know, shipping, secretary, every needless overhead all over the place. The profit margins are nothing but just so big when you don't have that.
Right.
And then the other aspect is that I'm a self-motivated individual that I can wake up and work out of my home office
mm-hmm.
or wherever I have. Many people can't do that. But the last year, just like teaching kids, for better or worse, how to school themselves, this has taught executives and employees how to motivate themselves and do their job at home. Because I come from
right.
the school and I'm this way. When I run a company, Okay. I pat you on the back. I reward you, but I'm tough. You right. do your friggin' job. Okay.
Right.
And if you get a job to do and it takes 8 hours to do it, and if I tell you, you have 4 hours to do it, you're going to get it done.
Right.
But if I give you an 8 hour, if I give you a 4 hour job and give you 8 hours to do it, you're going to take 8 hours.
Right. Of course. Okay?
So this is a way to create efficiency. Yep. And there's ways to make it work. Granted, yep. not all companies. So what are the effects it's going to have economically? Tremendous for the companies in different ways. And at the same time, maybe it's going to affect other areas because there's not going to be a lot. Well, there's going to be positives and negatives.
Right. I think the biggest negative is the social aspect of things. Because
big negative.
While I feel like there are a lot of things that we can do at home and maybe should do at home for the sake of convenience, ease, economically speaking, I think it makes more sense, whether it's for the business or even for the average person who spends a significant chunk of money commuting for work. I do feel like schooling and school age kids have suffered immensely. And the minute that my son can go back to a traditional environment safely, I will put him there because 9-year-old kids need to be with 9-year-old kids. And I think as adults, we don't necessarily need to intermingle with coworkers. But I mean, Bruce, I can't remember the last time I went out to lunch or dinner with someone. Like, honestly, like not in a special circumstance where it was, you know, we were both tested or, you know, limited capacity and put off, you know, socially distanced. I miss that interaction and I hope we can get back to it again. But that's really the biggest downfall, I think, and the biggest negative of all of this is the deprivation of human contact.
Well, like we talk about with the young kids, like my boys, you know, Henry and Rupert, like every other boy and girl around their age of 13 and 15 and 16, the social interaction they're losing is more detrimental to their future.
100%
social interaction that we're losing.
Right. Okay? I mean, they're coming into manhood.
They're coming into the manhood and womanhood. So more important, but also for us too. A lot of lonely people out there, a lot of depression, a lot of suicides, we've read all these horrific things that happen, and this is all explanation of to why. We need to interact, we need to communicate, we need to be able to date and socialize without worrying about hospitalization and dying.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's what we got to get back to.
Right.
And it's communication is key to everything in life. Socialization is key to mental health and everything in life too. Interaction, you know, being single today is very difficult for a lot of people. It's not the same, but in a work environment, this is where a lot of people meet their dates and their mates and their friends and everything. That's the beauty of working and interacting and all that. And I hope it all comes back comfortably.
I've never worked for a company where somebody at some point didn't find someone within the building to go out and have a few drinks with and become a little extra friendly with.
Yeah. Whether it's drinks with the guys or you meet a girl you like, or the girl 100%. Meets a guy, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Although I do come from the school, and I'll put this out there, everybody, through trial and error of my life and owning all the companies, I don't recommend dating where you work.
No, I'm
just going to put that out there. It's something that's not always going to work out the best to your advantage.
But even in the platonic sense, there's something to be said for team building by going out and just getting away from work and having a drink or having a meal. And
it's your peers. It's your teammates. Yeah. Right. It's you play soccer, you play football, you play baseball. You want to go have drinks afterwards.
I want to know who the people are around me on a daily basis, you know?
Absolutely. So. That's the beauty of going to work. But at the same time, what we're talking about is the beauty of getting along by yourself and working in your own environment.
Right. Because that's for me, Bruce. I've known this prior to COVID, but I'm not one that enjoys working from home. Mine is more functionality. Like I said, I have a 9-year-old son who doesn't go anywhere. So when I'm trying to record, if I'm in the house, that door's getting beaten down. But, beyond that, I just like the separation. I have a ritual that I personally love, and that's listening to a podcast or a radio show on my way to work and getting caught up with the world's events. And, I've been fortunate enough to not lose that during this time. And, you know, if you take that ritual away from me, a little part of me is going to die. Honestly, a little part of who I am is going to go by the wayside. And I don't like that. So, you know, that's another thing too. We talk about evolution. I think people have started to learn about themselves and evolve and adapt the way they need to get that peace of mind. I remember listening to a comedian about 6 months ago. I can't remember who it was, but they were like, no one can use the excuse, Bruce, anymore of if I just had more time on my hands. I'd clean the garage if I just had more time on my hands. Well, you've had nothing but time on your hands. If you haven't cleaned that garage yet, it's never getting cleaned.
No, If you haven't done it yet, you're a procrastinator in that area, and it's not going to change.
Just accept the fact that you're not capable of doing the things you think you are.
Yeah, exactly. But also, in the benefit of us in our natural environments before COVID hit, we're used to working in our aloneness. You know, I'm good at working alone.
I'm
solitude. Good at working in front of crowds. I like solitude. I'm used to it. People weren't used to it, and they had to adapt to it, and hopefully they have. And moving on, let's just all hope for the best. But yes, the light at the end of the tunnel is coming through. But when I read about these other countries closing down, and I read about 540,000 plus deaths in the USA,
right,
and I read about the openings and everything else,
new variants and all that stuff.
The variance, the whole bit, remains to be seen. Let's see. Let's hope for the best. It is, but there is definitely light shining at the end of the tunnel. Okay, we've done the COVID talk. Let's get back to, before we get in the news, I want to get back to a little UFC talk. Okay, Saturday night, UFC 260. Again, the excitement I have within myself when I'd walk in the octagon, even though there were maybe 40 people more than wherever there for the last number of shows, I found that the excitement within myself, my adrenaline, everything was pumping. I had a fun time announcing the show. Great time watching the fights. Wish Ortega and Alex happened. Would have made it that much more of an evening. But let's go through a few of these fights. Okay. Kama Worthy. Malarkey.
Yeah. No, that was crazy, right?
It was crazy, right? Jeez.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I mean, what can you say? Awesome.
Yeah. I mean, awesome. Kama Worthy had no idea what happened and was asking people what had happened. And, you know, that's a good knockout when that's the case.
Yeah, if that's the proper way to put it, it is. It's definitely a good knock if that's the case. And Miranda Maverick and Jillian Robertson, I mean.
Miranda Maverick is incredible. She's a PhD candidate teaching class, mid-UFC fight week. Yeah, she was running classes while she was in her hotel room.
Wow, you
know, she's incredibly awesome. An amazing, so she fought in Invicta a bunch before going to the UFC. And I would always tell Miranda, like, no matter what I accomplish in a day, Miranda Maverick will always make me feel lazy because she's, you know, at the top of her game, professional fighter. And also again, a PhD candidate at Old Dominion University. And is constantly getting better. And Jillian Robertson is no joke, especially on the floor. Dean Thomas, trained black belt, very, very talented. And Miranda was able to basically shut her down. Two judges gave her 30-27, 129-28. I thought it was really interesting. In the second round, Jillian Robertson had gotten Miranda to the floor and looked like she was going to get a superior position multiple times and had her back, but with an asterisk, Bruce. The 2.5-3 minutes that she was on the floor with Miranda, she never once got a hook in. She never once secured that back.
Right.
And that's really impressive because I said Robertson is a high level black belt and Miranda Maverick just shut her down.
Yeah, no, she did. She did. Powerful girl, too.
Mm-hmm.
Powerful.
Grew up on a farm. She's farm strong.
Wow. It's Matt Hughes strength. Flyweight.
Yeah.
Throwing the bales of hay, huh?
100%. Wow. She's strong mentally and physically. And she's a blue chipper to keep your eyes on.
My eyes are on her. Very, very mentally strong. I can see that announcing her. You know, I look into their eyes. I can see just strength. But body strength, she's a bull, man. This is one of the strongest flyweight women I've ever seen. You know, naturally.
It'll be interesting to see if she can stay at 125. She does have a difficult weight cut. But, I mean, as long as she's comfortably making it, she's going to be a handful for anybody.
Hey, she moves up to 135. She goes to bantamweight. She'll still be a fierce.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. No question. Okay. Bantamweight wise, Sean O'Malley, Thomas Almeida. Now, Thomas Almeida, always a game fighter, always a tough fighter. I have not seen him in the octagon in a while. Sean O'Malley coming in. I won't say that Sean O'Malley had anything to prove, but I think Sean O'Malley to himself had something to prove.
He always has something to prove.
Yeah. He's that kind of fighter. And, it's not so much, I think, watching Sean and having him on the show and talking to him, but watching his after comments and everything. It's not like he's striving for the belt as he's striving more for respect, success, and to show that he's, you know, the best at what he does.
He's got a chip on his shoulder. I mean,
there's a chip. It's okay.
Simple as that.
It's a constructive chip, though. It's a constructive chip.
It can be and it can't be. One thing that I was a little bit worried about is in the first round, it looked like he was going to finish the fight with that head kick, and he kind of walked off, and Mark Smith did not immediately jump in. And Daniel Cormier kind of pointed to the idea that maybe that's why the finish didn't happen in round number one. There are style points that Sean O'Malley wants to achieve every time out. And sometimes if you're striving for those style points, you can let things get away from you. But bottom line is it all worked out in the end. Vicious knockout of Thomas Almeida, and you know, the sugar show shines.
You know, it absolutely shines. One rule of thumb in the street in the world I always come from is never turn your back on your opponent, right? A walk-off is a walk-off, but make sure that they're down for the count before you walk off, you know? And let's face it, he's got style and he showed it. And he's definitely an attraction and it factor and growing with the fans. And we'll see where it goes from here. But I was very impressed with Sean's work. And I give credit to Almeida, tough kid.
Oh, 100%. I mean, no one eats that head kick like he did and continues to fight. I mean, that happened in like, what, the third minute? And
yeah.
The fight doesn't end until the third round. So yeah. Incredibly tough stuff, you know, showed by him. But with O'Malley, the one question that I have, I think he's definitely on the fringe of the top 10. But when he runs into some of the more skilled wrestlers at 35,
yeah.
I'm curious what that looks like, because he throws his strikes and his combinations in a way where it requires him to be incredibly confident and a lot of movement, a lot of fakes. He gets his opponents to really bite to his actions and then tries to capitalize on their reactions. And when O'Malley has to throw with the idea that someone may take him down, I'm curious what that arsenal looks like, because if he's fighting someone, even like a Frankie Edgar, who's shown the ability to take people down and control them, I don't know if we see him spin as much. And if he's not spinning, then his offensive game is not as dynamic. And if you take away that dynamic offense, maybe you reduce his opportunities to actually knock people out. But that's why they fight him. We'll find out.
We'll find out, you know. And again, okay, I said never turn your back on your opponent. I always say that. When I used to bang, I always had I loved a good spinning back fist, bottom fist, spinning back kick, spinning heel hook, you know, and I would hit with these quite often, right? And I loved them. But at the same time, every time you turn your back to an opponent, especially like a wrestler knows how to charge you, you're just really leaving yourself wide open.
And there's some good wrestlers at 35 in the top 10 that
they'll jump right in there. Yeah. Jump right in there and take them right down. You know better than anybody.
Right.
Yep. It's so we'll see. The other question that comes up, and this is not coming from me, but I've read about other people question Sean's durability physically.
Right. I mean, his legs have been an issue in the past. He was wearing those tie socks on Saturday night.
It looked
like the left tie sock had some significant tape underneath it. And I believe that was the injured ankle. But you know, the bottom line is, people are going to try to, you know, poke holes in things based on evidence in the past, no matter what. And that is one thing that people have been able to point to, is he's had some leg injuries and injury in his last fight with Chito Vera with his ankle. So that's going to remain to be sort of a question. But at the same time, Bruce, like, look at that low calf kick. At this point, it's an occurrence in almost every fight, no matter what weight class. Yep. So Sean O'Malley's going to have to worry about his legs, regardless of whether or not we've had evidence in the past that, you know, shows that maybe that they're vulnerable. So I wouldn't worry too much about it as long as he can keep going. I think the real concern is, you know, his movement relies on his legs being in good condition. If his legs are taken away from him, you really limit his ability to fight the way that he wants to.
Yeah, affects everything. You're exactly correct. I can't change anything you just said. Let's just hope for the best. I always like watching Sean fight. Look forward to the next time he's in the octagon. It brings a lot of flavor to his bouts.
Yeah.
Tyron Woodley, Vincent Luque. Tyron came out like a bull in a china shop. You know, I think
that's what we wanted, right? Like, people want to know if Tyron was still hungry. You got that question answered. Like, he was hungry. Answered. He went for it.
He was hungry. Went for it. The old story, you go in for a knockout, one of two things is going to happen. You're going to knock out your opponent. You're going to get knocked out. As soon as I saw that he wasn't lifting his arms, I knew this was going to be close to the end. Sean, you know, Tyron, please lift your arms, cover your face. I actually was yelling a little bit during this fight. I'm not
really
out of character. Yeah. Because, like, lift your arms, Tyron.
Well, you can see it coming.
Yeah.
It's hard not to vocalize it in some sense.
I got my little table with the Apex. I'm telling you, I love this atmosphere. It's great. I'm such a fan, you know, and Vincent Luque is such a beast. Oh, God, he's a beast. You know, Parada, that's the name of the word for Vincent Luque.
Right. Yeah.
He took out the great Tyron Woodley, and Tyron came there to fight, man. Yeah. Tyron came to fight.
And that's the thing. Tyron was ranked number 7 coming into the night, and obviously we've seen him fall on some tough times.
Yeah.
But that welterweight division is among the most talented in mixed martial arts. And when you look at Tyron Woodley, sure, he's ranked 7, but if Tyron comes in vintage form, he may as well be the champion. You know what I mean? If he's on all cylinders, like, he's one of the toughest outs in MMA. And the fact that Luque was able to weather that storm and wrap up that Darce on the floor, unbelievable stuff by him. Excited to see where he goes. Curious to see where Woodley goes, because even though he lost this fight, it was a Tyron Woodley that wanted to win in a way where, I mean, I don't want to sell him short and say that he didn't want to win his last fights, but he seemed to be a different fighter and someone who's longer in the tooth, a former champion. This is something that I've talked with Ray Longo a lot about. There is a light in the eyes of former champions that seems to go away once they've been to the top of the mountain and have to take a step back. And it's not often that those fighters can get back to the top of the mountain. And, you know, prior to this fight with Luque, a lot of people were saying that Tyron was done. And yeah, I understand that he lost this fight, but I think we saw a fire and a passion in the eyes of Tyron Woodley that we hadn't seen since the Darren Till fight.
Agreed. Simple as that. Agreed. I had a chance to talk to him after the fight. We were walking back. I was leaving the arena. In so many words, you know, Tyron saw an opening for the knockout, and he went for it.
Yeah.
And like I said, you go for the knockout, one of two things are going to happen.
He was close. He was very, very close. So,
speaking of close or not so close, let's get into the heavyweight. And again, Tyron, I want to see you back, Tyron. I want to see you back. Vincent Luque, I'm smelling gold for this kid. You know,
we'll find out.
We'll find out. It's good. It's in his future, and potentially, you know, he's got it. And it's nice to see, you know, the Brazilian, you know, still putting out some really top notch fighters.
Sure.
So often, Stipe Miocic and Francis Ngannou, you know, sure. Take number 2. Wow. Ngannou, the stuffing of the takedowns, the wrestling moves around the back from front to rear, the patience in his striking, cardio wise, we don't know. Is his cardio really up to snuff? It wasn't enough of a test of cardio, but it was a test.
I corrected myself there.
It was a test of cardio.
Yeah.
And he shined. I would have liked to seen it go into the third or fourth round for reasons of whoever made the best man win, but the best man did win.
Right.
Devastating knockout on what is considered the greatest of all time heavyweights in the UFC and Stipe Miocic. We had on the show last week, you know, friend, great guy.
I mean, we're going to get a rubber match, aren't we? We have to at this point.
I don't know. Do you think it'll be a rubber match?
Yeah.
I don't know if it'll be the greatest of all time heavyweight. No, because we all want to see Jon Jones. You know?
Right. But again, I have a hard time believing that Stipe has 3 or 4 more fights and Francis isn't one of those fights. If he stops fighting before then, sure.
He deserves it. He's a long reigning heavyweight GOAT champion.
Mm-hmm.
And Ngannou now on his way to GOAT status, potentially. Marketability through the roof for Francis Ngannou. I think he's hugely marketable.
Oh, 100%.
Hugely marketable.
Dude's a stud. And he's got an amazing story. I tweeted before the fight started, and it's true. I mean, you and I, we love Stipe. Fantastic human being. Super great guy. You know,
like Francis a lot, too.
No, 100%. I'll get to that point. But, you know, we've been able to enjoy some time with Stipe on the show. Would love to get Francis on in the future. But what I'm saying is when you look at the stories of Stipe Miocic, firefighter, husband, all-American dude, you know, just the guy that lives down the street, you know, he's a typical guy where it's like, oh, you know my buddy Stipe over there? Yeah, he's the heavyweight champion of the world. Really? Yeah. That guy?
Right.
He's so nice and humble. And then you look at Francis Ngannou, like struggling to get out of Cameroon, and Joe Rogan has chronicled his story being essentially left for dead in Morocco. Things like that make his story just the stuff of a motion picture.
It's a movie.
What I was saying is it's very difficult. I thought it was difficult to sort of pick a winner on Saturday night simply because the line was close and we already knew what had happened in the first meeting. But it's even harder to pick who has the better story because both are great dudes and are role models to their sphere of influence, like you always talk about, in ways that you want champions to be. And now that Francis has been to the champion, truly one of the best stories I think that mixed martial arts has ever seen.
No question. There's room for two movies. There's room for three, and deservingly so. But I think Francis
Buffer gets cameos in all of them too. So.
Hey, I'm working on my own project right now. Or they're working on it for me. All I can say is Francis Ngannou's story is what legends are made of, as is Stipe's. But getting to Francis, there's so much to this man that we're going to learn about. And as long as he defends and maintains and reigns as heavyweight champion, this is going to be a very glorious reign to watch. I think it's going to be very cool, very classy. And it's
a great story, no matter what.
I'm telling you, he's one of the most marketable athletes in the world right now.
You think he's going to fight John Jones? Well, that's what John wants.
That's it. I'm sure he would love to.
Back at the Brinks truck, like, do we do whatever we need to do to make it happen? Because that's got to be a pay-per-view that goes through the roof, right?
I think it would be the hugest pay-per-view in the history of the UFC.
Over 2 million buys?
I think it would be the biggest pay-per-view.
Okay, you're drinking the Kool-Aid a little too much.
I think it has a shot at becoming potentially the biggest pay-per-view that we had.
Has John Jones ever broke a million?
I don't think John Jones ever broke
a million yet.
But the combination, this is the thing. And again, I'm going on a big statement by saying that. Let me rephrase it and say it'll definitely be in the top five. The reason I say that is because with the heavyweight title, that's what it brings to the table.
I was just thinking about that because John Jones has been heralded as the greatest of all time, pound for pound, for a very long time. A lot of people believe that John is the most talented fighter to ever.
Now he's going
to
go up against King Kong. He's going to
If he's fighting for the title that, in my mind, mints you the baddest man on the planet.
Yes.
It's hard not to think that would carry over to casual fans.
You're spelling it out.
Yeah, you're right.
Every media outlet is going to be all over this.
I don't think it will outdraw Khabib and Conor, but top five is a realistic goal.
Top five.
Yeah.
Top five. But it does have a chance. But top five. You know, it's like John Jones' story, right? John Jones' popularity. Yes, he's not light heavyweight. He's going for heavyweight. This is a major move. This is even a bigger, more attractive move than when the legendary DC Cormier moved from light heavyweight, back to heavyweight.
Okay, I don't know about John getting hit by Francis. That's something we don't know.
This is my next question. Here's how I see this. Okay, I'm not saying who's going to win, but John Jones is going to have to be on the move.
Yeah,
he's going to be moving the entire time. There's no moving straight in on Francis Ngannou. You've got to be stick and move. Do not grapple and do not get hit.
I mean, I think he has to grapple at one point or another. He's going to have to grapple. But the thing that is interesting about John is, like you're saying, if he's able to stay on his bike and move and get in and out and not get hit, that's definitely the best path to victory for him. But early on in that fight, I mean, John has been hit in his last few fights.
Yes.
And that's something that is sort of new to John. John wasn't getting hit like that. Outside of the first Alexander Gustafsson meeting, John really didn't get hit much all the way up to his UFC, light heavyweight title capturing. But when you look at what Thiago Santos did to him, when you look at even what Dominic Reyes did to him, I don't know if John can walk through the power of Francis Ngannou in the first 7.5 minutes the way that he has throughout pretty much his entire light heavyweight campaign. And that's the X factor at heavyweight for John. Can John taste the power of these gentlemen at heavyweight and still remain John Jones? Because if he can't, we're going to see John legitimately lose the first fight of his career.
Yeah, that's the big question. When I was on Mike Tyson's Hot Boxing podcast the other week, I brought it up and I asked Mike about it. What do you think about the power? You know, John, because he was talking about John Jones and, this is how great he is. And the question was the power facing a heavyweight thing. And Mike said, look, he's not a striker knockout artist, but he can move.
Right.
And he can do so many different things. Fly
he's an athlete.
The air.
He's an amazing athlete.
He's going to have to approach it like Spider-Man would be taking on, the big monsters he takes on. Move, do whatever it takes.
And that's
great.
If John can do that, that's great. But with someone like Francis, just takes one.
It just takes one punch. But one thing I was also impressed on Francis about is I love the calf kick. I love the head kick.
Right.
It's like, I love the wrestling
super
maneuvers.
Patient. Super, yeah. Super patient. And that was the real sort of question about whether or not he would be able to overcome some of the issues in the first fight. I get what you're saying. Like, I don't know cardiovascularly, like, if Francis was a significantly different fighter, but I do know that he was able to stave off that wrestling offensive early and not, you know, get worried about it to where he wasn't sitting down on his strikes. You mentioned throwing kicks. Like, more often than not, if you're worried about a takedown, the last thing you're going to do is take one of your feet off the ground. With Francis, he showed a lot while also simultaneously keeping a lot left in the bag as far as where he's at evolutionarily speaking. So, like, I'm curious if John were to fight Francis, the fight's got to get to the third or fourth round. I really believe that. From rounds 1 to 3, Francis is the more likely winner at any point. But once it gets past that middleway point, John Jones probably going to be the favorite.
I think no matter who Francis fights, you just put out the basic design of the fight.
Right.
It's like Tyson, you know, when Tyson was fighting, it's like if it went past the third round, it's almost Tyson saying to himself, why is this guy still standing?
Right. The blueprint is there. It's just whether or not the execution can be done. And even if you fight the smartest fight, like I said, if you make one mistake with Francis, it might be the only mistake you make in the fight.
Exactly. Listen, he did nothing but impress me. I can't wait to watch him as he progresses. Stipe, all the best to Stipe. He will be back more than likely. And
well, Stipe's in the driver's seat right now, if you think about it, because he's the greatest statistical heavyweight of all time.
Right.
He's already got a win over the champion in Francis Ngannou. If Derek Lewis or Francis have to fight one another, Stipe could take the winner of that. If John Jones fights Francis, Stipe could take the winner of that. So while Stipe is no longer the heavyweight champion, he's kind of waiting for the next contender to solidify themselves for him to fight still.
That scenario you just put out is a scenario I believe to be the true case. It's either Jones or Derek with Stipe catching the winner. That's what I see. Right there.
Francis. Jones or Francis.
Excuse me. Yes.
But I mean, that's the thing too. Derek Lewis owns a win over Francis Ngannou. So if Derek were to fight Francis, maybe they can't come up with the money for John. One of those three men will be Stipe's next opponent, I think.
All right, let's just go one more thing and then we'll get off the fight game. If they can't come up with the money for John. Okay. Think about this. John's been spending months gaining weight and training to be a heavyweight.
Right.
There has to be money for John because we want to see John fight at heavyweight. So there has to be a deal made. And I believe there will be a deal made.
That's my belief. If for whatever reason, John doesn't take the next fight with Francis Ngannou, it's going to be one of two reasons. One, for whatever reason, they weren't able to make his price point, which I don't see them not being able to do. Or two, John just wants more time. He wants to find himself as a heavyweight. And if you're stepping in there with Francis or anybody really for that matter, when you have the reputation and lore that John does, you want to make sure that you're doing it the right way. Same thing with George St. Pierre when he moved up to middleweight. He did so on his own terms. He came in as the fighter physically that he wanted to be. I don't want to see John come in where he, you know, is walking at 225 or 235 and doesn't feel like he's a much different fighter. I want to see a John Jones in a heavyweight frame. And that's another question too, is what does a heavyweight John Jones look like? Because while he has to put on strength and size, Bruce, he can't do so in a way that will limit his mobility and take away what I think his biggest strength is at heavyweight, and that's being the more faster and agile opponent of whomever he stands in front of. So,
he's genetically engineered to do all this. His body, to me, is genetically engineered to adapt and form into exactly what it needs to do. So we'll see.
We'll find out. That's great and all, but if he gets hit on the button, it doesn't matter.
I don't care who you are. You get hit on the button, especially by a beast like Francis Ngannou. It's good night, Susan. You're out.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Again, entertainment, UFC providing it. I'm happy to stand in the center of it. and I can't wait to see it all happen.
We talked a lot about MMA on this show. I mean, that's how good of a card this was.
That's how good of a card it is, and it was, and it deserves to be talked about. And
like you said, we even lost the Volkanovski and Ortega fight. I mean,
But we got another Nurmagomedov. We got another one.
It's true. My goodness.
Jeez, I mean, the whole family's coming into the UFC.
Yeah, that's incredible. I mean, and they're welcomed with open arms. I mean, they're most dominant family on the planet, I think.
Heck yes. Come on. God, I don't want to get in a brawl at that barbecue.
No.
that family barbecue. All right, Oscar De La Hoya is coming back. He's going to box again in July at 54, 55, however old he is.
Right.
Another sign we're out of
fighting
the boxing
Dana?
World. I don't know. I heard Fernando Vargas put out a Instagram post. I think he'd be interested in fighting him. Who knows what the choice of opponent's going to be. And it just makes you wonder, after making tens and tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars.
You worry about the motivations. Worry about the motive. Like, I don't know. I mean, that's not super interesting to me. I mean, good for him if he wants to go out there and can make the money. That's great. But meh.
Good for him. This Deshaun Johnson situation is getting quite out of hand for this man.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't. When his text messages leaked,
I didn't read any of them, but I could assume what they probably were.
It was more of him like apologizing for the situation.
That's right, apologizing, and he's deleting the Instagram messages and all that's trying to settle with people now, and the settlement's coming through. You know, like he just turned down a baseless six-figure settlement demand from an accuser. And
I think we talked about it with Sammy. There was some plausible deniability leading up to, you know, where we were at the time of recording when we did that show. But now, like, when you hear these text messages and messages getting deleted, that window of, you know, plausible deniabilities, it's closing, and it's closing fast.
Yeah, I know there's people coming out of the woodwork and, you know, claiming he was like a serial, approached this whole thing like a serial, you know, for whatever he was doing. But we'll see what happens, see how it affects his career. You know, two students died after a collegiate rowing crew capsized during practice. This is unreal.
Really?
A collegiate rowing crew. Think about it. Collegiate rowing crew. That means at the top of their game.
Yeah.
I'm sure that boats capsize from time to time.
But you wonder how something like that happened. Because, I mean, as far as I know, these are generally in like bays or in like lakes. It's not like they're going through rapids and getting stuck upside down. And I mean, if you're again, like you said, at the top of your game, Bruce, you're probably pretty comfortable in the water. So that's odd. I wonder what happened there.
There were 20 to 30 mile an hour winds. The boat overturned.
What are they doing out in that?
Then? I don't know. People ran on the water, they say, trying to save them. Some residents lived up by sprang into action.
Just correct me if I'm wrong. Like, when you're in a rowing crew, you're just in a longer boat. It's not like you're in a kayak where your legs are stuck in something.
I think this is obviously, let's say, crew clip boat capsize. Five students aboard.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, you sit higher in that boat. It's not like you're tethered in a way. Like, when I see people in kayaks and those things get capsized and are upside down, some people can't get free. And you understand there, like, as far as I know, with rowing crew, it's kind of like a canoe almost. It's not.
Yeah,
it
is. It's just tragic. It's just really tragic. 100%.
I love rowing, by the way. One of my favorite things to get in a rowboat. I can do out here, but put me in a lake. I'll go all over the place.
It's a great exercise. I just bought one of these really nice rowing machines from my home gym.
Oh yeah.
That thing works you out. Let me tell you something. It's worth every damn penny I spent on it.
No, of all the cardiovascular exercises you can do, rowing is my jam. I like it.
Yeah. It's a full body. It's almost like a kettlebell workout. I noticed that my full body's getting the effect. So
Your chest. Yeah.
Oh, everything, back, of course. Okay. Collectible information before we go off. A Notorious Big's hubcap from the death ride with the SUV he was riding in.
Notorious B.I.G.
Yeah. Notorious B.I.G. They're auctioning off one of his hubcaps from the SUV. They expect the hubcap to go for $150,000.
It's one of those
it's a morbid thing.
I mean, we've talked a lot about that stuff. Like, I don't want to own something where it's famous for being part of a crime scene. You know what I mean?
Or like the serial killer memorabilia that's out there. People buy up like crazy.
I mean, I understand the allure to it in the sense that, like, maybe if you have like a dark museum, sure. But like, I don't want that in my home. It's just bad energy.
That's just too dark. Yeah, no, forget that. I mean, listen, everybody, whatever makes your boat float, that just doesn't make my boat float. Not to coin a pun from what we just talked about. I didn't mean it that way.
Bruce, next time, don't point it out. It would have been fine if you went to point it out. You point it out, and then I'm like, buffer. That's
like saying, hey, listen, you ever hear this joke?
Don't.
No, just tell the joke.
Just tell the joke.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, an exceptionally rare 15th century Chinese antique that was bought at a yard sale for $35, right? A vase.
Mm-hmm.
It just sold for $721,800.
Of course it did. Of course.
They got it at a yard sale. Unbelievable.
I wonder what our grandparents threw away that would be worth hundreds of thousands of dollars today.
God only knows. God only knows. And another one, Vincent van Gogh. You know, we all heard of the great Vincent van Gogh.
Mm-hmm.
One of his paintings just sold. They owned it for more than a century. They just sold it for $19.1 million. Wow.
When you have time, there's a show on Netflix called Made You Look.
I heard about that
documentary about some fraudulent art, and I was just captivated. Fake Rothkos and Pollocks. Very interesting movie. At the end, they start to show you some of the clients that bought this artwork in who sued the company, and you'll never believe what name I saw on there.
Who?
Frank J. Fertitta.
You're kidding.
Yeah. So it sounds like that lawsuit got settled and it was taken care of, but that was an interesting name to see across the screen.
Very interesting. So I got duped into a fake and a lawsuit.
Well, these people that were selling the fakes, like they had authenticated experts come in and go, yeah, this looks to be of the period. It looks to be right. Yeah. As far as I can say, this is 100% on point. And it turns out it was a math professor from China that was taking pretty extraordinary lengths to forge the artwork. But the thing that was actually kind of neat about it is while he was forging the artwork, and that's bad and that's terrible,
right,
it was his ability to do so that made him almost just as every bit as good as the artist that actually made those pieces of work. But obviously everything means everything when it comes to, or anything means everything when it comes to authenticity and the price. You can have a painting that is evaluated at millions of dollars. You find out that it's a fake and no one will give you $100 for it.
No, totally understandable. You got to watch out for it. You got to keep your sharp eyes, and it's all about buyers beware.
Right. That's why you got to go buy those NFTs now. Still not exactly sure what the hell that means, but I don't think you can fake an NFT.
I got two meetings this week on it. I'm still trying to figure it all out. But you know what? In this case, money's talking and people are walking. Hey, I don't think everybody knows what they're doing.
It sounds like it's really cool. I mean, if it's a way that you can create something that is truly one of a kind and you can't forge it, then yeah, that's awesome. But I just don't know how. Like, there was a clip of one of the NFTs was like a 3-second clip of Steph Curry draining a 3-point shot. And it's like, well, how is that just not on YouTube? I don't understand.
People are talking about taking this and making an NFT out of it. My partner. How? Chance. Like making it gold and moving around. I'm learning all this.
What is it? Like, what am I supposed to do with that? Like, I mean, buffer, go make the money.
Just drink it. Okay. Right. You don't have to do anything.
But you
just
can't
drink
even
it.
Drink an NFT. I don't even know how I'm supposed to display an NFT.
You know
it's
what?
It's like a Bitcoin. Sure, TBD. It's worth a lot of money, but I don't know what it is.
TBD to be continued.
I think
tell
us
what's happened.
We're going to learn more about Bitcoin soon.
Yeah, we've got a special guest coming on in April, third week of April. Sammy's friend's going to fill us all in on everything.
Crypto's really interesting. Like,
we'll learn more then. Let's not go into it now.
Well, I still don't understand. You could give me Bitcoin, and I know it's worth money, but if I can't physically hold it, I still feel like you didn't give me anything.
I'm going to be learning as you learn. Let's learn together.
All right.
Let's see what's up. And we'll educate our listeners at the same time. All right, everybody, if you're listening to us now, subscribe to us on YouTube. Go to YouTube, subscribe. Giveaways will be happening in the future to all subscribers having a chance to win, especially when UFCs start going live again. Hint, hint, hint. Hint, hint, hint. Subscribe to the show. Watch the show on video. TJ, what's going on? Anything?
This week, I'm going to be down in Los Mochis, Sinaloa, Mexico, for Icon Fighting Federation. They got back-to-back nights with RJJ Boxing on Thursday. Mixed Martial Arts takes center stage on Friday. It is headlined by UFC veteran Brock Weaver, who's trying to get back to the octagon. So definitely check that out on Friday night. I believe the first fight is at 5 p.m. Pacific time, I think. So tune in. Check out Fight Pass. Also check out the show Extra Rounds. Myself, Dean Thomas, Ray Longo, Pearl Gonzalez, chopping up all the MMA action from the Octagon, and it's fun. So check it out, UFC Fight Pass and the Fight Pass Facebook page.
Very cool. What a couple of characters you work with, Longo and Pearl.
Oh, trust me, they get me in trouble all the time.
I have no doubt. I have no doubt. And it's fun trouble, I'm sure. All right, everybody. I really enjoyed seeing you all from the Octagon on Saturday. I'll be back on April 10th for the next UFC show. And until then, I'll be back next week with TJ with another exciting guest, which we did not have this week except for TJ. And I'll call you Exciting TJ as my guest.
That's the first time ever.
There it is. So we'll talk to you next week. Everybody set your goals, write them down, be the best you can be when you set on that path. As you're going through the path of life, by being the best you can be, that means you're winning. That's what we're all about here on It's Time Radio. Thank you again for all your videos and audios coming into brucebuffer.com. And, of course, the Cameo orders that I fulfill and that TJ DeSantis fulfills you on Cameo. Check out TJ DeSantis on his cameos, me on mine. Don't say a word, TJ. I'm selling. And also go to brucebuffer.com, and we'll get those weddings, those birthdays, those special events. You name it, we do it. Your wish is my command. Love you all. Thanks for tuning in. Always take a puncher's chance, as proven Saturday night. Buffer out.